episode 21. Welcome to episode 21 of Thinking Habits. I'm Simon.
I'm Pam. Hello.
And this week we're talking about procrastination, which is kind of ironic considering we were supposed to record this yesterday. We are actually recording it on Saturday afternoon. Procrastination is something that I do occasionally. I will go through phases sometimes of putting things off. Normally, when I'm feeling anxious, I use it as an avoidance technique.
Really. Oh, yeah, I'm very bad for it. I always have been. But it's definitely worse if I'm anxious about stuff. I'll tend to distract myself with other things, such as, you know, games on the phone.
Yeah.
Especially like repetitive puzzles. And yeah, it's just a way of avoiding what needs doing. I've just been reading the Wikipedia page on procrastination. It's actually really interesting. They define it as the avoidance of doing a task that needs to be accomplished. It could be further stated as habitual, intentional, or intentional delay of starting or finishing a task despite its negative consequences. And the etymology is from the Latin procrastinare, pro meaning forward, with crastinus, till next day, from crass, which is tomorrow.
Yeah, that's so interesting.
Yeah.
I love a good etymology, mate.
Yeah, I didn't know that. And there's I'm just picking out a couple of facts from the Wikipedia page. I'm not going to sit here and read it all. But a 1992 study showed that 52% of surveyed students indicated having a moderate to high need for help concerning procrastination. It is estimated that 80 to 95% of college students engage in procrastination, and approximately 75% consider themselves procrastinators.
Yeah.
Sorry, I mangled that a little bit. but I think, yeah, I mean, students...
Oh yeah, I mean,
revision is...
I remember doing homework in the common room in the sixth form.
Yeah,
on the day it was due and stuff like that, and I had to when I did my nursing degree. I don't know if you remember, but I had to be really, really forceful with myself to make sure I started assignments as quickly as possible, because otherwise I'd just leave it and leave it and leave it and leave it and leave it.
You always think you've got more time. And it's amazing how much you can find to do.
My sock drawer is tidy.
when you're putting off a task that you don't want to do, can be a good way of getting other things out of the way.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. You know, but then it's weird with procrastination, because if you've got something you don't particularly want to do, things that you previously didn't want to do that are less unpleasant suddenly become actually something you'd like to do.
Yeah.
So, like, for example, I've got to do a load of filing or a load of account stuff or whatever. Suddenly cleaning the bathroom is, you know, the best thing I could possibly be doing with my time.
Yes, yeah. I mean, it's saying it's not always a negative trait, because it can be considered wise. A wise response to certain demands that could present risky or negative outcomes or require waiting for new information to arrive. I wouldn't really class that as procrastination. I wouldn't associate that with it. There's been tasks where, you know, I could start it, I could do that, but I know that I will be getting more information through, so I might as well wait, because I might have to change a load of what I've already, change something that I've already done.
That's really interesting. I've only ever really thought of procrastination in the kind of negative context, but I suppose in the strictest sense of the word, putting off till tomorrow, you could do that intentionally if you knew you were waiting for something else.
Yeah.
As opposed to, I'd rather reorder my CDs alphabetically than, than fill in this application form.
Yeah.
I really started when I started doing mindfulness. I really worked on procrastination as a, they say do one scary thing a day or do one onerous task a day.
Yeah, yeah.
I that's something I do definitely do at work. If I've got an email in my inbox you know, you obviously, you look at your emails and you look at them in terms of urgency and whatever. And sometimes your inbox can get so unwieldy that rather than tackling anything in order, you just don't tackle any of them.
Yeah, oh yeah, I'm really bad for that. I mean, I had to start... There's been times where you almost have to triage your inbox before you do anything else.
Yeah.
And, like, star mark the ones that really, really need dealing with.
Yeah.
The more urgent ones. Because if you've got... Yeah, it's like anything. If your inbox is full of things you need to do, it just all becomes noise, and you can't pick out what's important.
Mm.
And it, like, some people will work methodically through the oldest, dealing with the oldest ones first, and it's like, well, okay, but then there's other people who say, well, no, anything older than a week, delete it, because they will have, if it's important, they'll have chased it up. Do you have a more recent one?
I find that I do that very rarely.
Yeah, I find that actually leaves me cold, the thought of just deleting.
Deleting an email without responding to it.
Yeah.
I used to try and do, well, my normal routine is I'll do, like, depending on how many emails I've got, I'll do some triage in the morning, first thing, and work out which need responses from me based on the wider scheme of things. So it could be a project deadline, or it could be a meeting, or it could be this, that and the other, and then you work out how much time that's going to take, and you kind of allot sort of tokens of your time. So if I've got like 3 hours before lunch and I know I can do those four because it's going to do this and this, then fine. But then obviously the noise of the day gets involved in that, and it becomes a bit of a pain.
Yeah.
Which is why I do tend to, this is why I like starting work early, because you've got a quiet office.
Yeah,
And you can get rid of that. You can get rid of stuff without more stuff coming in. And so you start the day ahead. That's how I've always worked. I certainly, especially as well in the prison, when you come in and you've just got, like, you know, you've come in and on reception, sometimes you'd come in and there'd be no referrals from the night before, which is incredibly rare. And you'd be like, yes, emails, I can get rid of them. Or you'd come in and you were the person who was on call or on the radio or whatever, because you'd carry the emergency radio around with you, and there'd be 12 assessments, and you'd just be like, oh god. And you could just see, because I'm quite a visual thinker, I literally see a physical pile of papers that I've just got to wade through to get things done, and you just think, oh god. And it's not like you can put them off, because you have to go and see these people within 24 hours. Yeah. And I think that helped me to procrastinate less, because it gets you into the habit of just, right, bite the bullet, get on with it, come on, it needs doing. The quicker you start, the quicker you finish.
Yeah, I mean, I know a lot of people, myself included, say they work better when there's a fixed deadline.
Yeah.
If you've got a fixed deadline, then, and you know roughly how long something's going to take, then you can organise yourself accordingly.
Yeah.
But when something's open-ended,
it
can be easy to do other things that are easier. And I did a time management course ages ago, and it said, you know, you write your task list and you split your time up, and you the advice there was, like, give yourself half an hour in the morning to do emails, then switch your email off for an hour while you do other things.
Oh, that bothers me.
No, I couldn't bring myself. I couldn't bring myself to do that.
You know that episode of Black Books where they pour the wine out and it's the really expensive wine? You've got that ticker.
Yeah.
That would be in my head. I'd just be like, there'd be just thousands of really important emails.
Yeah, you'd log back in and it's everything's on fire.
Yeah.
Assign bots. But then you set out your tasks, and it said the temptation is always anything that's a bit unwieldy or an onerous task, the temptation is to leave it and do all the little things, because you can cross them off and you've got that sense of achievement, which I totally relate to.
Mm.
But then you've still got the horrible task looming over you. And so you'll feel better if you get that out of the way, and then you can whip through
I kind of agree with that. But also, if I've got 10 tasks that I know I can finish in 20 minutes, and then I've got the rest of the morning to deal with the onerous task, I'll do that.
Yeah. Yeah, that, I mean, that's the way around.
But it also depends as well, because sometimes I often also getting in early. If you know you've got a, say, I've had to write emails before, or correspondence, or you know, business papers or whatever that I know are going to put people's backs up. So yeah. I'll do that early and get it sent and give myself a chance to weed through the chaff, the short ones, yeah, before
the flame war starts on the
email, which is quite... It's weird. It almost... Email becomes a bit like a game of chess sometimes. You've got to work out strategically who you're responding to. And
yeah.
But it's not, you know, it's not just email. It's stuff at home too. You know, I go through phases of just, you know, because I'm really pernickety. My obsessive compulsive traits come out more when I'm anxious, and I get very pernickety about being tidy and being neat and being, order. Because if everything is ordered, then my brain's not noisy.
Right, okay, yeah.
Whereas I think sometimes when I'm more relaxed, I can... You know, it's not like I'm messy, but I can embrace a bit more.
You can let
random.
Things, yeah, you can let things go.
Yeah, I don't have to. You know, everything doesn't have to be in its place immediately. You know, but because it gets tiring, it's tiresome when you feel obliged or, you know, compelled to do these things. Mm. You know, to tidy up and to make things ordered. But you know, I remember years and years and years ago, I was working in the Isle of Man. I was working for NatWest. I did a secondment over there for about 6 months. It was supposed to be longer, but I basically rang my old boss after 6 months and said, I cannot do this anymore. It just wasn't for me at all. There was lots of different factors that were causing problems over there. And I stayed up all night, one night, sorting out the finances that would enable me and my partner at the time to get home, and I wrote page after page after page after page after page of different scenarios that could happen and what could go wrong. And I think now, thinking back on that now, I'd not yet actually sought help. It was before I'd ever actually sought help for any kind of mental health problem, because
right.
I was still like 22 21 yeah. 22. And I'd never asked for any kind of help, but I was so anxious. I think now, reflecting back on that, and that's 20, you know, that's 20 years ago. That was probably the most unwell in terms of obsessive compulsive anxious behaviour that I've ever manifested, and I didn't even know what it was. And I look back on that now, and I think, oh my God. And that's kind of the opposite of procrastination, really, because I went right down the rabbit hole of planning for every eventuality.
So you couldn't be taken by surprise, or trying to eliminate that, any surprise factors that might crop up.
Yeah, but I suppose that's the continuum, isn't it? You've got procrastination on the one end, and you've got full catastrophizing on the other.
Yeah,
and you're
micromanaging everything to avoid. And it, you know, running yourself into the ground, trying to predict
every eventuality,
or provide for every potential eventuality.
And I think you need to be somewhere in the middle, don't you? You've got to have a healthy understanding of what's coming and be aware of that.
Yeah.
But you've also got to give yourself a bit of a break. You've got to be willing to be able to say, all right, this doesn't need to be done now.
Yeah, that working out what can wait
and
give yourself a bit of time. I mean, you say like you like working early in the morning, and I can relate to that, but unfortunately for me, but for the past few years, that's not really been an option.
No.
Because it takes me so long to get going in the morning.
You've really had to look at how your physical symptoms manifest and work your work around that, haven't you?
Yeah, yeah. Meds routine and everything, but that keeps a set routine. Like I have to eat at certain times because
you have to take
medication
and
I have to have food with that, because otherwise it'll make me ill, or you know, the side effects will be even worse. That kind of helps keeping a structure, because you build it around that.
Yeah. I think when you've had relapses and, you know, and work's been stressful as well for you, I think, I mean, we've talked about this a number of, we've kind of spoken about our own mutual sort of procrastination when we're stressed.
Yeah.
You said to me a few weeks ago, I think you shared a meme or something where it was like, there was a list of things you needed to do. And it was this cartoon person, yeah, a list of things to do and a list of all this stuff that was going on. And so the solution to that problem was to hide under the duvet.
Have a nap.
And, yeah. Or have a nap, yeah. And I can relate to that. You know, there is an inbuilt hibernation reflex in me that I think is my lizard brain is very Cro-Magnon in that sense, because I could quite happily sleep for 4 months over this time of year.
Oh yeah.
And that lends itself to a healthy procrastination, because you don't really want to do anything.
No.
It's interesting, because but then once you get yourself going.
Yeah, I mean, I think procrastinating, it can be a very easy rut to get into. It's like you put one thing off and then you'll put something else off, and then, you know, it's things as simple as, I don't know,
doing the laundry.
Doing the laundry, but putting it away when it's done, you know, because it can be very, you know, you just end up with
mountains.
You think, well, I'm going to wear that, so I won't put it away. And I'll wear that the next day, and I'll, you know, so you think, well, I might as well leave it out. And it's like, actually, it's not that much work.
And
then you feel so much better when it's done and
absolutely,
it's tidy. And,
yeah. So that on the one side you've got things like that, little chores, but then when that builds up, that's when you start. You know, I worked with clients and patients who, you know, their anxiety triggers were myriad. They had lots of different things that caused their anxious symptoms to manifest. So that they would procrastinate over things like housework and then bills and then other things around the home and then personal care and things like that. And then it compounds then, because you've all of a sudden got five things that you're putting off, and then it becomes so daunting that when the sixth thing comes in, you don't even give that a thought, because you've already got five things that you're mentally managing not to be able to do.
Yeah.
And then it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and then it snowballs. And then certainly when people get into problems with debt, you know, in this current climate with austerity and inverted commas and, you know, all the other current issues at the moment, there are a number of people who procrastination can often be, you know, it can look like procrastination, but it's not. It's fear as well.
Yeah,
and I think a lot of people are really, really struggling with that. But again, there's negative and positive consequences to putting things off.
Yeah, I mean, and I think, you know, you put things off, and I mean, certainly, to my mind, I will know that I've got all these things to do, and they're building up, and it becomes too much.
Yeah,
and I can't do any of it because it's built up, and then it's you struggle to prioritise, and sometimes it can take talking to you, and then say, well, actually, it's not that big a task,
no.
Or it's not what should I do first, or can you help me do this?
And
it can be as simple as that. But you say about, you know, certainly things like debts, a lot of people are just about okay as long as nothing happens out of the ordinary. You know, there's I broke a tooth recently. You know, I'm incredibly lucky that I was able to just go and get it sorted at the dentist. But if I was in that gap where I'm earning money, but just enough to push me over not getting free dental care or anything. Then, you know, it's
when you're living paycheck to paycheck.
Yeah,
something
like that can really throw you. Or you know, say your shoes break or something. You know, it's I can see how it's a scary place.
Yeah, absolutely.
A scary place to be. And if you're worrying about that, it'd be very easy to, you know, I haven't got time to even think about anything else. So.
Absolutely. And it's a vicious circle as well, because if you're depressed, or you know, you're having problems with depression or anxiety, that can lead to putting things off. But then reflecting on that, and often with depression comes a lack of self-worth. You then reflect on that and you think, well, I'm not doing things, I'm not doing things right, I'm not contributing, I'm not helping, I'm not worth anything. And then you get into that cycle of, well, why do I bother? And then it becomes a vicious spiral.
I can definitely identify with is you then get the guilt over not having done the things you set out to do. You think start of the day, right, I've got all these things to do, and then it's all of a sudden it's like 3 o'clock and you haven't done any of them. So then you feel guilty, which makes you feel worse and makes it even harder to do anything, and that can be quite an easy cycle to get into and a difficult one to break. Because it's just that just becomes your normal.
Yes, absolutely. And then in order to avoid any possible ramifications, it can be easy to try and gloss over that. And say, you know, you're fine. I mean, your dad, I know he doesn't mind us talking about it, because he's very open about the issues that he had when his mental health took a real dip a few years ago.
Real downturn, yeah.
And he was isolating himself and avoiding contact with people, avoiding contact with bills, avoiding contact with landlords, and avoiding contact with us, really. You know, we'd go over and see him, and he'd say to us, "Oh, can we meet in town? I need to go and get some things in town." Rather than, because we would come to his house, and he'd say, "No, don't bother coming to my house. I'm gonna be in town. Meet me in town.
I want to get out."
And basically, what that was him hiding the fact that he had let the house go, hadn't he? And it was in a bit of a state, and basically it took a bit of an intervention, unfortunately, but the change in him over the last couple of years since he's come to terms with that and worked on the issues surrounding that, he's in a completely different place. But that was a very stark wake-up call to me, to see how bad it can get. And you know, it made me reflect on where I am, or where I had been when I'd been, you know, in my own relapses with depression and anxiety, and it made me sort of reevaluate my triggers. I must admit, it was a shock of that.
I think identifying triggers is really important, and can really help. Things like, you know, if it helps to organise your time, like we talked about bullet journaling, and I haven't done as much of that as I would like, and I do want to restart it again.
I said I'd feedback on that. I think I mentioned in the first episode that I had a diary that I wrote in on January the 1st, January the 2nd, and May, and that's basically what I've done with bullet journaling. To be honest, I found a similar kind of journaling app that I used on my phone, which I use a lot more. And I tend to make much better use of the calendar, but I would like to do more bullet journaling, because when I went back into it a couple of weeks ago, I found it very therapeutic. But to be honest, I put it off. I procrastinated, so I didn't do it. But you know, there's always time to pick it back up again. And actually, Katie, who was on an earlier episode, has sent me a link to a couple of things regarding bullet journaling. There's a few competitions and giveaways for some bullet journaling kits.
Cool.
which I need to get amongst. I'm hoping the competition's still running, actually. It's on Instagram.
I'll
have a look at it.
I know the bullet journal I got, because the books we got are by the same publisher or whatever.
Or whatever they are,
But mine got, I got a little ruler, a set of stickers, and even some tattoo transfers.
How does that
help
you with
bullet
journaling?
I don't know. But
is it just like a B that you, the letter B that you put in your hand, and it reminds you to?
I can't remember what journal. I can't remember what they are actually. But stickers are good. Mm. The stickers are good.
Let's see what you've got in there.
I've got some page markers, some stickers, and
Stags. Oh, that's just the emblem of the publisher.
Oh right, okay. Well, I've got some tattoos, some transfers of that.
Mm, they're quite cool.
You could put them on paper, I suppose.
And smiley faces.
They're like emoji faces.
Oh, that's like those, you know, those behaviour charts when you're a kid.
Oh,
and
yeah.
If you do a good thing or do a chore, you get
a sticker.
You get a sticker, and at the end of the week, you get an ice cream or something.
Yeah, and I think they're page markers, page marker stickers.
Oh, yours is well fancier than mine.
I know.
Oh, I just got like a book. Rubbish.
And I got a pen with it. The pen's really nice as well. Pen's really nice to write
pen's
with.
Really nice. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know what to put on your wish list, don't
well,
you?
Well, I might. Yeah. I might just use the pen that I've got. Whatever. So bullet journaling, as a habit releaser and making a new habit is something that I do want to revisit, because I think it has merit, certainly for me. And actually think, you know, it's something that I've been really, really reflecting on, because I got a new job this week. Hurrah. And so I'm going to be using bullet journaling for, the first couple of months of any new job is always just information overload. And I think it's something that would really help me to get myself together and make sure that I'm on the right page with what I'm doing.
And other assorted business buzz phrases.
Yeah,
get on the right page.
Getting all my ducks in a row, and you know, picking the low hanging fruit and all that malarkey. What a load of nonsense. Mm. I'm really looking forward to that actually, and I think bullet journaling will help. A couple of our friends do it regularly and are very good at it, so I'll be tapping them up for more info. But as far as procrastination goes, I think I'm much better than I was years ago. I think I am better at that phrase, feel the fear and do it anyway. I'd much rather get it out of the way than sit and wait.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose procrastination, it kind of goes hand in hand. I suppose that it's quite closely in my mind. I mean, this is complete amateur, purely my opinion. Seems quite linked to OCD, because it seems like a trait of OCD, because it's like, if I'm doing something, at least I'm busy.
Mm.
And I know I'm quite bad for that. You know, I'll do something else to avoid a task. And it's like, well, at least I'm busy. At least I'm doing something. Mm. And
but does your desire to do something else come from an obsession? Are you obsessing about a certain thing, a certain consequence, or a certain action, or something? Is it something that you can't get out of your head, or is it just a fear and a reluctance to do the task because of what might happen?
It can be either. I mean, sometimes it's something like, I haven't played solitaire for ages, but I'll use that as an example. I used to do it a lot about 10-15 years ago. I'd sit and play solitaire, and it's like, well, I have to play it until I complete it.
Because
you know, when you play it and you reach a dead end and you can't make any more movements.
Mm.
And then if you're playing it on Windows, when you win it,
when you get the
cards jump all over the screen.
So would you do that instead of doing other things?
I can't do that until I've won this.
Right.
And
it's like that analogy, isn't it? If I get three balls of paper in the bin, then I'll do it.
I'll get then I'll get that job.
Then I'll do this kind of thing. I think the closest modern analogy now is that I will check my email, or I'll check social media. You know, I'll just do a circle of social media and then I'll get on with this, or I'll just do this and then. So I do set myself kind of quiet time where I don't look at any socials, Which is why when I was like preparing for the job interview and stuff, I didn't put any podcasts on, or I put my phone on the other side of the room.
Yeah.
I put my my tablet on airplane mode and downloaded the documents, like the job spec and the company docs and that. And then I put classical music on because I have to focus, if there's any kind of distraction, I'll be off.
Well, so your mind wanders. I can't remember where I read it, but so the mind wanders. It doesn't just wander; it wanders in a direction.
Mm.
So, I think the analogy used was you sat outside trying to do some revision, but in the distance you can hear a radio playing, and it's a song you like, and then suddenly you realise that for the past 2 or 3 minutes you haven't been reading at all.
No.
You've just been looking at the words.
You've been gazing
but
across the page. Yeah.
You're just looking at the page, but listen. You've actually been listening to the song. You can just about hear.
Yeah.
I find it very difficult to work in absolute silence. Mm. I like to have some kind of background noise. Mind audio books of books that I've already read, so I know the story, and I kind of tune in and tune out of it.
Yeah.
I listened to The Stand quite recently, and I've read that about 5 or 6 times at least. So I know it pretty well.
Pretty well.
So
yeah.
I can have the audiobook playing and just tune in and out to see where I'm up to.
Yeah.
But I don't. I know it well enough that I don't need to concentrate on it.
No.
The narrator has got quite a sort of soothing voice.
Mm.
So. It's just like a background noise.
Mm. See, a lot of the audiobooks that I've got are factual.
Yeah.
So if it was I've got things like I could probably put on something like the Red Dwarf book, Infinity Welcomes Careful Drivers, because I must have listened. I've read that book a dozen times, but I've listened to the audiobook probably about 20 times.
Yeah.
I know every intonation of that book, and it's. I'll put it on when I'm going to sleep sometimes as well, because I find it relaxing. I find it settles me. So I could probably get away with that because I wouldn't necessarily be listening to it because I already know it.
Yeah.
But if I had I've got a new audiobook about Lee Harvey Oswald, which is dry. It's really interesting, but it's really, really dry. And I have had to rewind bits because it's so in depth that I miss things even when I'm concentrating on it.
Yeah.
So my brain would be so focused on something like that that I wouldn't pay attention to the task I was doing.
So you'd be procrastinating by listening to
an audiobook about Lee Harvey Oswald, which is a bit odd, I've got one lined up about serial killers, so that'll lighten the mood a bit.
Yeah. I've got one to listen to that I haven't started yet. About the Donner Party.
Oh yeah, that's gonna be brill.
I've just read after listening to a podcast about it, and I remember vaguely learning about it in school. So I really wanted to read a more detailed book, which was it's a novel based on it, but that was very good. And the book I really want to get seems to be out of print because it's really expensive.
Yeah.
So I've got that audiobook lined up to listen to.
I find podcasting, not just obviously because we do one, but I find most of my media intake comes from podcasting. I find internet news sites and TV news sites are very hard to watch because there's an inherent bias in there, despite how unpartisan they claim to be. There's a lot of that there. With podcasts, you can be more choosy, and there's a wider range of different sources of information that you can go for. There's commentary from both sides, so you can make your own view if you want to look at news stuff. There's loads of mental health podcasts, some really, really good podcasts about mental health. I mean, I'm just looking through my podcast list actually at the moment. There's one called Me and My Brain by someone called Emma Lloyd, and that's a podcast about mental health and mental illness. Emma has over 20 years of personal and professional experience of living and working with mental illness. That's a really, really good and really, really interesting podcast. And then we've got other ones. So, for example, Russell Brand does his Under the Skin podcast. Joe Rogan does a lot, has a wide range of interesting people on. He's quite opinionated, and he's got his flaws, but he will pick everybody from scientists to musicians to actors to comedians to, you know, there's a whole gamut there, and I find that really, really interesting. The higher practice podcast for mental health providers. It's Keith Kurlander runs that podcast, and it's a podcast where we bring mental health clinicians the most current and innovative methods for transforming clients' lives as well as your own. So that's quite interesting, because that's coming from a practitioner's point of view. Yeah. There's a lot of podcasts about from a patient's point of view, which is really, really interesting. And then you've got you've got kind of open forum podcasts. There's one that the Last Podcast Network do. It's on a bit of a hiatus at the moment, but there's 180 episodes of it, and it is I would highly recommend it. It's called Sex and Other Human Activities. It's done by Marcus Parks, and originally it was Sarah Benincasa, but it's now Jackie Zabrowski who sits with Marcus, and it's called Sex and Other Human Activities, but it's largely about mental health. Marcus is very open about the fact that he has bipolar. He's been medicated for bipolar disorder for 12 or 13 years, a long time.
Number of years, yeah.
Jackie talks about her mental health issues as well, and there is no topic that isn't discussed. It can be very, very hard listening sometimes, because they're talking about quite triggering issues. However, it's also very funny. It's also very warm. And it was an inspiration for me. Listening to that podcast was one of the reasons, one of the kicks up the backside that I needed to actually start this, really.
Yeah, and it's very non-judgmental, because they get listener issues.
Listener feedback,
People will email in for advice. I think that they give very useful advice, but that they're also very non-judgmental of situations that people find themselves in, and that they'll give them advice on managing that situation, and like you say, it's very warm and often funny.
Absolutely. And then it's a kind of a tangent from mental health podcasts, but Mortified, the Mortified podcast, is a podcast where people relive and revisit their childhood diaries, amongst other things, and kind of reflect as an adult on what they were like as a teenager or a child. And it is so funny. It's cringeworthy in places. But for me, it normalises what it is to be an awkward teenager.
I
find that brilliant.
Yeah, I think that's great. And I think one thing that sort of podcasting and social media and in some ways making the world a much smaller place, because you can contact so many people, and there's all kinds of forums where people can share information, and there's a balance of humour and, you know, sometimes some quite touching situations,
which is
raising awareness of the, you know, I think it makes people feel much less isolated, because you realise that you're not the only person who feels like that.
No.
And I know certainly when I get anxious, or if my depression is quite bad, I will feel I have a tendency to isolate myself and feel like there's the whole, well, why would I reach out, because people don't, you know, why would people want to spend time with me when I'm in this mood?
Yeah.
I don't want to spend time with me when I'm in this mood. But I think, you know, looking at resources online and listening to podcasts, it can make you realise that actually it's fine.
And also, it's something that you can download and listen to in the car or on your phone, and it becomes a therapeutic community where, I mean, we talked about it before, comments on social media, but forum groups on social media can be a blessing and a curse. They can be a bit of a minefield. Whereas if you've got a podcast or a radio show or a YouTube video or something like that you can download, take to one side and listen to in your headphones when you're commuting, or you can listen to. I put them on podcasts on when I'm doing the washing up or the cooking or whatever.
Yeah, they're really good to listen to when you're doing sort of housework and stuff.
And you can be in control of how you take on that. And what you can do is you can go through a list. I mean, you look at something like the Risk podcast by Kevin Allison's Risk podcast. Again, another true storytelling podcast. The tagline is "True stories you never thought you'd dare to share." Some of them are very risque. Some of them are some of them go into some quite dark territory. Some of them are absolutely hilarious. But I've not listened to every single one of them. There's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of them, but if I'm feeling in a certain mood and I'm looking for something that will help me normalize my my current state, state of mind or whatever, there's podcast resources or YouTube resources or that I can pick in and that I can go, right, well, let's see what this person's got to say about it. And I might listen to it and think, nah, that's not for me. That doesn't gel with me at all. And that often happens because you've got social differences, you've got cultural differences, you've got different experiences. No two experiences are the same, but sometimes things gel, and that's really useful.
Yeah, and even if you just pick up one thing from it, and the rest of it, like you said, doesn't resonate with you or doesn't gel with you at all, it's still useful to realize that other people
feel like that way. Absolutely,
and get stuck into the same sort of ruts. And even if how they get out of it isn't what you would want to do, I find it positive to hear that they got out of it. They turned that mood around, and turn that frown upside down way.
I know what you mean, but I also, to get back on topic, because we've digressed a little bit into podcasts, but to get back on topic of procrastinating, I sometimes do, we've talked about it on the podcast before, that I struggle to not compare my issues to other people's. When I'm feeling bad, I think, well, why am I feeling so sorry for myself, in inverted commas, because this person's got it worse than me. And I have to remind myself, and we have to remind each other sometimes, that your problems aren't the same as other people's problems, but that doesn't make them any less valid. But at the same time, sometimes listening to other people's issues, which may be, 10 times worse than mine, reminds me that if they can get through that, I can get through mine.
Yeah.
And that helps me to get myself sometimes out of a rut, and get myself back on, and reflect on the fact that I do have the skills that I need to get past this rut or this issue or this blip that I'm going through. I do have the network, the friends, the family, the loved ones, the practice. I've been here before. I know that this is transient. I know that it's going to go past. But sometimes I just need somebody else who I've never heard before, and I'll probably never hear again, say it.
Yeah. Say that they've been through and come out the other side.
Yeah.
And that it will pass. But there's obviously there's things you can do to help help that along.
Absolutely.
And help yourself.
And getting the people who we've spoken to on the podcast so far, people like Casey, people like Dan from Tiny Epic Photos, people like Jonathan running Head to Heart Network.
Yeah.
Individual stories, it's so uplifting to get that. And what that does for me is keeps the procrastination to a minimum, because I feel like I've made we've made a space where we can allow people to talk, and I feel like it's a bit of free therapy for me, to be honest. It's a bit of a free check-in, and I don't mind saying that. I like the fact that I can speak openly about stuff, and it does help me to keep from procrastinating, because I have a schedule. I have, we have a Sunday.
Yes.
Every Sunday. And touch wood, so far, 21 weeks in, we've never missed the deadline, and I don't intend to. I am thinking about getting to 25, 26, and then calling that like season one or something, just for a couple of weeks over the Christmas break, but I haven't decided how I'm going to do that. What I might do is I might do what I intended to do before work got in the way, which is record a number of extra ones and put them out. But we'll see how that goes. One thing I would like to do next week, I'm not going to do it this week, I was going to, but I did receive an email from a friend of ours in response to the support animals episode that we did last week. I would like to touch on a couple of topics in that email because I think they're very, very important, but I want to discuss it with them first. I don't want to disclose anything without checking first. So a teaser of sorts, I suppose, but it does remind me that please do get in touch if you've got any thoughts on any of these episodes. It doesn't have to be the current one, it can be any of them. Just get in touch, drop me an email if you think of anything that you feel,
or topics you want
us to discuss. You know, if you've got an issue, you know, if you've got an issue that you want discussing, if you want a bit of a God forbid, if you want any advice from us, or if you think there's something that we haven't discussed or we should be paying more attention to, drop it on an email, drop it on the Instagram. It's podcast@thinkinghabits.co.uk is the address, and we're on at Thinking Habits on the socials. Do get in touch and give us a shout.
Yeah, I would be happy to.
Absolutely.
Go into different topics that people want. Or anything, like you say, anything that you want revisiting.
Yeah.
Or maybe a more in-depth look.
And before we wind up, just a quick one. Medication update. You've been on it for a week.
It's nearly a week. Yeah, I started it on Tuesday. This is the tablet for the Tecfidera, which is a disease-modifying drug for relapsing remitting MS. Mm-hmm. Just to recap, when we did the last podcast, I was going to be taking my last Copaxone injection.
Yeah.
And got my delivery on Monday, so started Tuesday, which would have been an injection day.
Yeah.
It's a split dose, so you take, it's like a half dose for the first week, and then you step up to the full dose. And so far on the lower dose, I haven't had too much in the way of the hot flushes. Although
you've had a couple of pink,
I've had a couple
pink episodes.
The first tablet I took was the worst hot flush that I had.
Yeah.
And bit of an upset stomach.
Yeah.
Definitely. I've read up on some of the side effects that people have experienced. Definitely bloating. So for some, it literally feels like I'm swelling. I can feel myself swelling up after I've taken it. But
We know that's transient.
Yeah. If those side effects pass, and I'm also kind of bracing myself a little bit for those side effects to kind of step up a bit next week
when
I go on to the maintenance dose. But we'll see. And to be honest, if that's the worst I have to put up with for a few weeks, it's certainly manageable.
Yeah.
But
it makes a huge difference from taking injections.
Yeah, even I was, you know, thinking about travelling. I mean, the packaging is a bit big, but you know, that can't be avoided.
No. It's going to be so much easier,
isn't it?
It's
so much easier taking tablets through airports. Just thinking about holiday, because we're going away soon. Mm. Going through airport security with tablets is much easier than going through airport security with
injections.
Pre-filled syringes.
Yeah, they tend to. You always get searched.
Well, it's good, and it's because they've got liquid in, so you've technically got two bags. If you've got toiletries, you've got two bags containing liquids.
Yeah.
Even though they're all sealed and everything, but it just needs an extra check. But fingers crossed, I won't have to go back to those, because that's the option if I don't tolerate this Tecfidera.
Yeah.
My option is to go back onto Copaxone.
And you don't particularly want to do that, although I think you're, from what you've said to me, you're quite pragmatic about that.
Yeah. I mean, it's good to know that I've still got somewhere to go. I mean, I don't want to go back to the injections just because of what they've done to my skin. Mm. But they are side effect free.
Yeah.
And that's obviously a massive positive.
Of course,
and
it is. Yeah.
I wouldn't. Anyone who was thinking about, anyone who was in that position that I was in when I was first diagnosed, I wouldn't tell anyone not to take it because of side effects. Although I think when you're newly diagnosed, there's now more options available.
Mm.
So people might choose to take those.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we'll leave it there. So until next week, you know the drill. Keep talking, and if you need to talk, you know where we are.
Bye.
Bye.